Welcome to a Burning Fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. I first shall read to you the 46th Psalm. The reading of it will be a blessing because it is a psalm of assurance and confidence, praise of God and comfort to the believer, and a source of encouragement. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, and she shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, and the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord, and what desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow, and cutteth the spear in sunder, and he burneth the chariot in the fire. Be still, and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. It is generally thought that David wrote most of the Psalms, but the exact authorship of many of them cannot be specifically designated, at least not with dogmatism. As for the 46th Psalm, there were many instances in the life of David that were characteristic of the sentiments of this psalm, so we rather believe that the Holy Spirit used David to write this one. Just what particular occasion may have motivated it, we cannot be sure. There is a song that was composed by Martin Luther. It is entitled, A Mighty Fortress is Our God. It is sometimes called the Battle Hymn of the Reformation. It expressed patriotic fervor and has the quality that stirs confidence and hope and the daring in the heart of the believer to fight the good fight. It is said that Luther caught in this hymn the meaning and the message of Psalm 46. As 1 Corinthians 13 is called the love chapter, and Hebrews chapter 11 is called the hall of faith, this psalm is called the psalm of faith. From verse 1, we conclude that it is good to have faith in God, who is presented to us in three ways. He is our refuge, a place to hide and be covered in safety from the storms and dangers. He is our strength, a guarantee of stability and steadfastness and power. He is our help, the source of assistance, and the one who lifts up and heartens and saves in time of need. In verses 2 and 3, the writer presents a contrast between the tumultuous world in general and the thoughtful serenity of faithfulness to God. The earth may be moved, the mountains carried into the seas, the waters may roar, the mountains may shake and tremble, and everything that man has considered firm and secure, lasting and stable, is subjected to collapse and to commotion. But what of that? God is our refuge and strength and help. Therefore, we will not fear. One has commented on this passage by writing, At this moment, we have the tumult of war, the unrest and the anxiety of statesmen and nations as to the balance of power. In politics at home, there is strife and contention of parties. In the commercial world, there are countless anxieties and fierce competitions. Even the religious world is not free from the noise of controversy and the din of party strife. In every realm of life there is unrest and tumult to a greater or lesser degree. All things are in commotion. Now this sounds like the writer was describing our present day, doesn't it? But he was not. This was written back in 1892, before all of us were born. We do not wish to minimize the turmoil of our times, but we only call to our attention that such has always been the case in our world of varying degrees. Little wonder this world has been described as a vale of tears. Job said in Job 14:1, "Man that is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble." But God has seen his people through trouble in the past, he does now, and he will again. And this is the assurance of the 46th Psalm. And why is our world in such a state of frustration? It is because mankind is unable to live as we should without God. The turbulence of the world is made so, directly or indirectly, because of sin. Man's lust and uncontrolled passion, his greed, his hate, his unchecked ambitions, his selfishness. Because of sin, there is never to be found in this world the complete peace that cannot be interrupted. Nothing in this life is stable. Nothing in this life is secure. There is a realm, however, where strife and commotion is unknown and cannot dwell. But it is not in this life. We only get glimpses, fleeting taste of that realm now and then while we're here on this earth. But even so, in the midst of all the worldly havoc, we will not fear. And why is it that even in the midst of the earthquake and the invasion, the disaster, the desperate situations, that the believer is not overwhelmed? Why is there no foe too strong, no danger too much for the one who holds firmly to the hand of God? Why can the believer look with such confidence upon God as his refuge and strength and help? The psalmist answers with four reasons that we wish to observe. 1, from verse 4, instead of the fear-instilling confusion of this world, there is the supply of refreshing, life-giving waters that provide grace and comfort and nourishment. The city of God is a symbolism for the place of habitation of God's people, which corresponds to the Lord's church today. In that city is given a free-flowing stream of mercies that bring rich blessings to the citizens of God's city, the place of supply and blessing. Secondly, from verse 5, security is assured because of God's presence. God is in the midst of her. His presence was the security of ancient physical Israel. His presence is no less with his people now. His presence makes his city unlike the threatening world that quakes and roars. His presence means stability. She shall not be moved. Here is that which is dependable and that which will last. Here is something upon which we can look and can count on, for it is without end. As the song says, "When all around my soul gives way, he still is all my hope and stay." God is the rock of refuge. He's the haven of rest, providing for us the anchor of the soul. And thirdly, God shall help, and that right early. Our undaunted state of mind is attributable to this guarantee. God, in his time, at the proper season, with utmost speed, will assist us in time of trouble. We all love the parable of the Good Samaritan, because that man acted in the likeness of God. Trouble befell the traveler, and the Samaritan gave the needed assistance. Not only was his help immediate, but was also promised for the future, even in the surrounding of gravest peril. At no time is help so welcome as in the time when we are beset with problems and troubles. The psalmist tells us that God is ever present with us to see us through each trial. And fourthly, from verse 6, we can remain serene in this life because the power of God is greater than that of our enemy. The heathens rage, the kingdoms are shaken, but the enemy shall melt beneath the utterances from the voice of God. Sometimes it seems the wicked have their own way, and we have temporarily fallen before our enemies. But that is not the case. Why should we fear? When our enemies are at his command and the Lord of hosts is with us, our ultimate victory is secured. In verse 7, God is identified as the God of Jacob, which means, of course, he's also the God of Abraham and Isaac, the God who created all things by the power of his word. It is that same God, Jehovah of heaven, who has promised to be our refuge. There is no other power like the power of our God. Beginning at verse 8, the psalmist turns our attention to two worthy considerations which add to our security and confidence. One is the works of God, and the other is the glory of God. He mentions two works in particular. One is the desolation he hath made in the earth. Now this desolation is against the enemies of the righteous. By such desolation, the Lord is simply saying, "Do you not see how vain it is to fight against Jehovah? Is it not clear that all of your noise, your rush, your fury and roar and fear and boasting is but empty prattle? Can you not realize how senseless is the struggle against the eternal and omnipotent God?" His work of judgment, his condemnation of evil, and his destruction of wickedness gives hope and it gives assurance and comfort to the righteous. Verse 9 mentions another work of God, and that of giving a true and lasting peace. Now this peace is not obtainable in this world, by this world. God acts so as to render his enemies incapable of prosecuting their devastation by the destruction of their very implements with which they wage war. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow, he cutteth the spear in asunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. When the weaponry of the forces of evil is taken away, then peace can come to the people of God. Friend, there are three kinds of peace available to us. One is peace with our fellow man. Two is peace within ourselves. And three, there is peace with God. Do you realize that we can have peace with God in this life? And even to a large measure have peace within ourselves and others. But so long as there is the existence of sin and temptation, the peace of the latter two kinds can be interrupted and taken away. As a final reassuring note, the psalmist mentions the glory of God. God is saying to a disturbed and confused world wherein we must live as his people, "The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge." Verse 11. This companionship and fellowship with God will be sufficient for our needs, dear friend. The following makes the point quite well, I think. Two painters each painted a picture representing his conception of the peace that Jesus gives. The first chose for his scene a lone sea nestled away in the mountains. It was a calm sea. Not a breeze was blowing. Not a ripple disturbed the surface. Not a cloud was in the sky. It was night, and the bright moon was casting her reflection on the mirror of the placid water. The second painter also drew on his canvas another sea. It was a wild and restless sea. The boisterous wind was beating upon its bosom. The giant waves were rolling and foaming in their fury. Every tree on the shore was bending to the might of the terrific storm. And out in the midst of the angry sea and above the thundering waves, a giant rock lifted its head. In the top of the rock, a dove had built her nest. There she found repose. She was resting, undisturbed, and unafraid. It is the latter scene, not the former, that describes the peace that Jesus gives. The first is only stagnation. The last is peace. In the peace that comes from above, there are two elements, calm and storm, tranquility and commotion, silence as well as turbulence, an inward stillness and an outward strife. The Lord does not promise his people a peace of perfect surroundings, nor ideal circumstances. He does not guarantee them immunity from trials and persecutions, from reverses or opposition. He does not grant them to be immune from temptations and unjust criticism and tribulations and such like. No, not at all. "In the world ye have tribulation," Jesus said. Instead, he gives his people peace in spite of these things. Within the soul of that man who trusts the divine power and walks humbly with his God, There is established a holy calm that refuses to be disturbed by the angry elements around him and beneath him. He has made the Rock of Ages his refuge. He is not afraid. Because of God's judgment against evil, and his granting peace to his own, his matchless and boundless glory, dear friend, if we be Christians faithful in the Lord, we can take heart, and we can be comforted, and have no fear in our restless and turbulent world. This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.